As we were completing our last classes, we completed chapter 26 of the third canto. And in this chapter, Kapila Muni described first the creation of the universe, beginning from Lord Karna Dakshai Vishnu, Mahavishnu, and then through his glance impregnating the Pradhan, the primal energy, which I think, by the way, this is somewhat my speculation, although I may have heard it somewhere or read it somewhere, but I'll take the credit and the blame for it. I think this is where the Buddhists go. Those Buddhists who are perfect in their realization, they go to this Pradhan. What they want to do is be in the material energy, be one with the material energy, and not be attached to any of it, just be in the undifferentiatedness of the material energy. So that places them in this pradhan, because there is no variety, but yet it's the material energy. They're not longing for the spiritual energy, even the impersonalists, like the Brahmavadis, who wish to merge into the great one, the great light. The Buddhists are somewhat different. So the Brahmavadis, Brahmati, Paramati, Bhagavaniti, Sabhute, by the mercy of Krishna, they merge into the great effulgence of Krishna's transcendental body. Although they don't know of Krishna's body, they are interested in the light. And the Buddhists, it seems that they go to this Pradhan. And the Pradhan, of course, the Brahma Jyoti is free from anything material, free from all material anxiety, and it is in contact with Krishna's energy, so it is quite blissful compared to miserable material life. And then the Pradhan, there is not that kind of contact with the Brahma Jyoti, but yet there is no material misery. And these can't, practically speaking, they cannot be even compared. Or if you multiply each of these by a billionfold, koti koti, by so many, thousands and thousands and thousands, you multiply it, it doesn't even compare to even a drop, not even one drop of the ecstasy that comes from direct association with Krishna in the spiritual world. Not even one drop if you multiply that thousands and thousands of times. But yet, those pleasures and the absence of those miseries are far, far greater than anything available in the material world. The material world is dominated by misery. Although we don't like that, we don't want it to be like that, yet it always must be like that. The very nature of the material world is its domination by misery. So, in the process of describing the creation of the universe, to give the conditioned souls who have a spirit of enjoyment, to give them a field in which they can enjoy, they can be an illusion, because we can't actually enjoy. Our position is to serve. We are prakriti. Our position is to serve Krishna. So, as long as we don't accept that position, we are placed in the material world by Krishna's kindness to try our best, to hope that somehow or another we can enjoy, squeeze some pleasure out of the material world, which is impossible. So the material world, gradually we heard how it is created, going from subtle to gross, and the three modes of material nature are manifest, and the false ego in each of the three modes of material nature are manifest, and the different consciousnesses manifest, and from each of the different false ego and the different modes of material nature, different ingredients are manifest. So we heard about that, how the material ingredients are created. And then, after that, the Lord enters the universes which come from the body of Mahavishnu, and all the elements enter into the universe, and the Lord enters as Govardhaksha Vishnu. And then the universal form comes into being. This is called the Bharata Purusha in the second canto, or in the 11th canto, 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is called the Vishrup, the universal form. So we heard also how this universal form, which is almost like the blueprint for the creation of the material world, how all the, this is a prerequisite for the actual specific manifestation of the material world, the material planets and all the demigods and everything else. So this is a prerequisite, like a blueprint, like the blueprints of a complicated machine are required before the machine can be assembled. So this universal form on which everything is situated is required before the universe can be assembled. So this universal form could not be brought, the required life could not be brought into it, although it had consciousness. And this is very much parallel to our situation, because the universal form, or the universe, the universal form is, it's like, it's the form of the universe in the same way that the body is the form of ourselves at this particular point. So a parallel is being brought that even though consciousness is there in the universal form, consciousness entered, it could not be brought to life until the supersoul entered, and that is the third expansion of Vishnu, Jiradaksha Vishnu. So when he enters, the supersoul enters into the universal form, then it comes into, can arise, and the universe can be created. Of course, this is all is very technical. And in the same way that even though the soul may be within our body, or the soul is in within every body, until the supersoul enters, even though the material ingredients are there and the soul is there, until the supersoul enters, he is the life of the soul in one sense. When the supersoul enters, then the body can come to life, as in the universe, as also in each individual. So the differentiation is being made for the living entity who is examining these principles of material nature. He's making the discrimination. Kapila Dev is explaining to his mother the difference between three things. There are the material ingredients in their 25 different varieties, beginning with earth, water, fire, air. Well, that's really the end. The grossest is the earth. And then water, fire, air, ether, false ego, and mind, and the senses, the karmendriya, the gyanendriya, the knowledge acquiring senses, the working senses, the sense objects. So these, and the gross and subtle material elements, these make up the basic ingredients of the material world. So that's one category of elements of that which the material world is composed. There's an entire range of material elements and their combinations. And then there is the souls. There are the souls. Aparyayam idastvanam prakritim viname param jiva bhuta mahabaho dam dharyate jagat. There is the soul, and then there's the material energy, and then there is the super soul. So the soul should not think himself part of the material energy. but rather what he is being requested to do, and what the Sankhya philosophy and ultimately what Bhakti Yoga is requesting us to do, is turn away with our mentality, turn away from the material energy as if we can be happy surrounded by the material energy and exploiting it and squeezing it and trying to get pleasure from it. No. We're being requested to turn from that mentality and from those material ingredients as our shelter. Nithai, could you open? Now we so strongly have that tendency in the material world to be absorbed, try to surround ourselves with those material things that we imagine are going to make us happy. So we have to turn from that. The soul has to turn from that to the super soul. It's the mentality that's important, that's most important, because we can remove ourselves from the material ingredients. But if we don't change our mentality from enjoyer to servant, the result will not be there. And that is the process of Sankhya Yoga, and that is the process of Bhakti Yoga. To change the mentality from servant to from enjoyer to servant. Oops. Well, that reveals everything about me, doesn't it? Okay. So, in the last verse of that 26th chapter, it is summed up. Therefore, tam asmin pratyagatmanam diya yoga pravrittaya bhaktya varaktya jnanena vavitsyatmani cintayet. Therefore, through devotion, bhakti, detachment, bhaktiya, devotion, detachment, and jnanena, through concentrated devotional knowledge, through spiritual knowledge acquired through concentrated devotional service, one should contemplate that super soul as present in this very body, although simultaneously apart from it. So the super soul is in every body, although it is not only in the body. Just like the sunlight during the day may be in this room, but because it's in this room, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have any separate existence. So the super soul is in every body, giving life to the body, or allowing the soul to give consciousness to the body, and permitting the soul to invigorate the body with its own spiritual energy and consciousness. But the super soul is separate. He is not dependent and limited to the body as the soul is. So through bhakti, one should understand the super soul. So that is, practically speaking, the message. Bhakti, detachment, and knowledge. These three things. This is, practically speaking, the message of this 26th chapter. Now Kapila Muni is going to explain further in chapter 27, which is entitled Understanding Material Nature. So Kapila Muni, see Bhagavan Uvacha, he continues. When the living entity, so if one through bhakti, transcendental knowledge, and detachment, and one needs detachment, because again what we're trying to do is move from this side of our focusing on the material energy to this side, focusing our consciousness on Krishna. So one can't move from this side to this side unless one is detached from this side. If one's holding on to this side, the pull, it doesn't work. We never make it to this side if one is holding on this side. So detachment is required. So when one has done this, is detached, has transcendental knowledge, and has bhakti, then he becomes free from the forces of material nature. So Kapila Muni describes, he continues, When the living entity is thus unaffected by the modes of material nature, by this process, because he is unchanging, because he's actually a soul, and does not claim proprietorship, he's not thinking himself the owner and controller and the enjoyer of the material world. He's detached, he has viraktir. He remains apart from the reactions of the modes. He's free from the bondage of the material energy, although abiding in a material body, just as the sun remains aloof from its reflection on water. So that's what Kapila Devi has explained. How the soul, if he's detached and performing devotional service and is fixed in knowledge, even though he may be within the material body, he is not bound by the material body. This is also described in great detail in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport and we'll hear. And this example, as the sun remains aloof from its reflection on water, similarly the soul, although abiding in a material body, is aloof from it. He's not attached to it any more than the sun is attached to its reflection in the water. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the previous chapter, Lord Kapila Dev has concluded that simply by beginning the discharge of devotional service, one can attain detachment and transcendental knowledge for understanding the science of God. Here the same principle is confirmed. A person who is detached from the modes of material nature remains just like the sun reflected on water. When the sun is reflected on water, the movement of the water or the coolness or unsteadiness of the water cannot affect the sun. Similarly, Vasudevi Bhagavate Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. When one engages fully in the activities of devotional service, Bhakti Yoga, he becomes just like the sun reflected on water. So right now, the sun of our consciousness is reflected upon the water, and we are identifying with the reflection. The water is the material nature. So therefore, when the water shimmers, we feel that we are shimmering. When something bad happens in the material world, we feel that it's happened to us. When something good happens, we gain some elation. But that is just the shimmering of the water. That's the material energy moving. This explains our position very wonderfully. And how difficult our position is. Because with every movement of the water, every ripple of the water, depending upon our karma, the water will ripple one way or another. Some days beautiful high waves are there and we're enjoying. Other days we're down in the valley of the, or rippling one after another, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. This is just material nature pushing, and because we identify with it, we have to suffer. Because we want to enjoy, we have to suffer. That causes the identification with the material nature, this desire to enjoy. So this is a very wonderful example that Kapila Muni has given. So the sun actually doesn't have anything to do with the reflection on water, neither do we have anything to do ultimately with the ups and downs of this material world, this material body, or the material mind, or anything having to do with these fundamental principles of material nature, these 25 elements. Although a devotee appears to be in the material world, actually he is in the transcendental world. As the reflection of the sun appears to be on the water, but is many millions of miles away from the water. So one engaged in the bhakti yoga process is nirgun, or unaffected by the qualities of material nature. And a little lower down in the purport, Prabhupada is going to speak on the word avikarad, from being without change, and akartritvat, by freedom from proprietorship. Akartritvat. Akartritvat means not doing anything for sense gratification. Freedom from proprietorship. That this is mine, and when something is mine, it is meant for my pleasure. So this is freedom from that mood. Akartritvat means not doing anything for sense gratification, because that sense of it's mine is absence, proprietorship. When one does something at his own risk, there is a sense of proprietorship and therefore a reaction. But when one does everything for Krishna, there is no proprietorship over the activities. By changelessness and by not claiming the proprietorship of activities, one can immediately situate himself in the transcendental position in which one is not touched by the modes of material nature, just as the reflection of the sun is unaffected by the water. So this is actually, this is jnana mentioned in that previous verse. This is transcendental knowledge, spiritual knowledge. Now, that's the free soul, the soul who is not entangled in the material energy, because he's detached. He has no akritvat, no sense of proprietorship, no desire to enjoy the material world due to his knowledge, and he wishes to serve the Lord in devotional service. So he's free, even though within the may possibly be in a material body. But on the other hand, in text 2 and text 3, the soul who is bound tightly, trapped within the material body, trapped in the reflection, trapped to identify with every up and down of the water. It feels like that, doesn't it? That every time something happens good, you're forced. Now you have to get happy. And then, boom, the bottom falls out and something bad happens. Or something perceived as bad, or not the way we want. Or you lose something, and then, boom, now you have to become miserable. And now you have to become happy. Now you have to become miserable. It's the up and down and up and down that makes it that there is no happiness. Because after a while you realize that the up is just going to be temporary. And the more you cling to it, the more disappointed you're going to be. So even the up, when we're feeling happy, it's a source of misery. Because it's temporary. This is the nature of clinging to the reflection, the bound soul. When the soul is under the spell of material nature, under the spell, it's like a magic incantation that places that's under the control of the material energy. And that's just how Maya was described in the previous chapter, if you remember. It was like an illusion. We identify with something, an illusion, and we become absorbed in it. So when the soul is under the spell of material nature and false ego, identifying his body as the self, he becomes absorbed in material activities, and by the influence of false ego, he thinks that he is the proprietor of everything. So if every living entity thinks himself the proprietor of everything, basically, that everything is meant for his pleasure, so how unhappy are we going to be? Just by that one thing alone, we think everything is meant for my pleasure, but look, he's using it for his pleasure. So what emotion springs to the heart? Envy, immediately. Envy. So this is the key emotion in the heart of every bound soul, envy. And if one is envious, no matter what one has, one cannot be happy. Because there's always something that someone else has, even though it may be very small. It's the nature of material consciousness, envy. Thinking, because the false ego, thinking himself the proprietor of everything. Aham kriya vamudatma. Actually, the conditioned soul, Prabhupada explains, is forced to act under the pressure of the modes of material nature. The living entity has no independence. When he is under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is free. But when under the impression that he is satisfying his senses, he engages in sense gratificatory activities. He is actually under the spell of material nature. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Prakriti Kriyamanani, one acts according to the particular modes of nature he has acquired. Guna refers to the qualities of nature. He is under the qualities of nature, but he falsely thinks that he is the proprietor. This false sense of proprietorship can be avoided simply by engaging oneself in devotional service under the direction of the Supreme Lord or his bona fide representative. Simply by engaging oneself. But one has to be very simple to gain this benefit so simply. In other words, one has to simply be a humble servant of Guru and Krishna and not touch anything as if it were mine. Because the tendency is to always to want to squeeze some sense of that I have done this by my power and everyone should appreciate me and recognize what a wonderful thing I've done. This tendency is so strong. But if one is very sharal, simple-hearted, and just simply considers himself a servant of Guru and Gauranga, then the false sense of proprietorship can be avoided. Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita was trying to accept for himself the responsibility for killing his grandfather and teacher in the fight. But he became free from that proprietorship of action when he acted under the direction of Krishna. He fought, but he was actually freed from the reactions of fighting. Although in the beginning, when he was non-violent, unwilling to fight, the entire responsibility was upon him. That is the difference between liberation and conditioning. A conditioned soul may be very good and act under the mode of goodness, but still he is conditioned under the spell of material nature. A devotee, however, acts completely under the direction of the Supreme Lord, just thinking himself, oh, a loving servant, and nothing is mine, nimama moham. Thus his actions may not appear to be of a very high quality to the common man, but the devotee has no responsibility. He's not touching the material energy. So what is the result of being bound? Because here we're describing the boundness of the soul. The result is the conditioned souls, this is text 3, therefore transmigrates into different species of life, higher and lower, because of his association with the modes of material nature. So that is the result. We want to enjoy, we become entangled in the modes, and sada sad joni janmasu, we have to take one birth after the next. Unless he is relieved of material activities, he has to accept this position because of his faulty work. So what is the faultiness of his work? It's that mentality that I am the owner, I am the enjoyer, I am the proprietor. This mentality is the basic fault that causes the entanglement of the soul in the material energy. So the question can be asked then, how is it possible that the soul, which is eternal, so again, this is jnana, this is Sankhya philosophy, which is very similar to Jnana Yoga, so it's very intellectualized. So one can ask the question, how is it that the soul that's eternal, eternally pure, how is it that he can experience illusion, a life of bondage, and have to experience this transmigration. So that question is answered in the next verse. Actually, a living entity is transcendental to material existence. But because of his mentality of lording it over material nature, his material existential condition does not cease. And just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. So although we have nothing to do with the material energy, in fact, due to this mentality of wanting to lord it over the material nature, lording it over the material nature means viewing the material nature as if we were the owner, the proprietor of the material world, and it is meant for our pleasure. Due to that mentality, even though we are transcendental, we still are involved in material existence. Just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. So what is the example of a dream? What is that example? What's a horrible dream you've had recently?
The example?
No, tell me a horrible, real, unless it's really bad. Get run over by a truck or something.
Is it the bogies and people were chasing us?
Yeah. People, so you feel so much anxiety when that happens. Who raise your hand if you get chased in dreams sometimes? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Some of us get chased in real life also. But you feel so much anxiety, although it's only a dream. You have nothing to do with it. No one's actually chasing you. There's no tiger, nor people with clubs or knives or guns running after you. It's just a dream. But due to illusion, identifying with that illusory character created by the mind in the dream, so many disadvantages come to the heart, and you wake up and, ah, what a relief. That's what it's like to get out of the entanglement, the illusion of identifying with the material body. It's all a dream. And what's the cause of that? The tendency to enjoy. That causes the identification with the material energy. So the conclusion, therefore, the conclusion after hearing these first four verses is obviously to break the dream, and the way to break the dream is to... Did anyone ever have the experience that you're dreaming and something horrible is happening, and then you realize, hey, wait a second, I'm just dreaming, but you're still in the dream, and then there's no trouble anymore, even though the same thing is happening, but you realize you're just dreaming, and you're not fully awake, but you're still in the dream. Yeah, tag that happens sometimes.
Not for a while.
Yeah,
you can actually sort of carry on the dream and go up and wake yourself up.
Yeah, right. So even if you want to, you can still stay in the dream for some time. But you're no longer in anxiety. So similarly, soon as the identification with the illusory dreamlike world of matter is broken, then there is no more anxiety. And what stops the identification with matter is when the desire to enjoy is broken. And then also through knowledge, knowing that we're different than that material thing, the body. So therefore the conclusion is, it is the duty of every conditioned soul to engage his polluted consciousness, which is now attached to material enjoyment, in very serious devotional service with detachment. Thus his mind and consciousness will be under full control. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. It is therefore recommended in this verse that one engage very seriously in the devotional service of the Lord. This means that one should not think that he is the proprietor, benefactor, friend, or enjoyer. He should always be cognizant that the real enjoyer is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the principle of Bhakti Yoga. One must be firmly convinced of these three principles. One should always think that Krishna is the proprietor, Krishna is the enjoyer, and Krishna is the friend. Not only should he understand these principles himself, but he should try to convince others and propagate Krishna consciousness. And a little further down. One particular point mentioned in this verse is very significant. It is said here, Prashaktam Ashaktam Pati. The mind is always attracted by Asat, the temporary material existence. Because we have been associated with material nature since time immemorial, we have become accustomed to our attachment to this temporary material nature. The mind has to be fixed at the eternal lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo. One has to fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. Then everything will be very nice. Thus the seriousness of Bhakti Yoga is stressed in this verse. So if one is going to practice this Sankhya Yoga, which is a mixture of yoga and jnana and bhakti, but ultimately it's meant to bring one to bhakti. So what are the practices? So the main practice, as Kapila Dev has already explained, the first thing he has said in the beginning when explaining this, the process to his mother, he gave her the essence first. So one has to, the essence is that one has to break his attachment to the world of matter. And the way he does that is become attached to sadhus. And what is the benefit of becoming attached to sadhus? Then, because the sadhus will speak about Krishna. Krishna Katha. And one will hear Krishna Katha. And by hearing Krishna Katha, the result of hearing about Krishna is that one becomes attached to Krishna. And one understands that he is a servant of Krishna. Krishna is the supreme proprietor. Bhuktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam yatvamam shantim richati. He is the proprietor, he is the enjoyer, he is the controller. It is Krishna. And one gradually becomes attached, attracted and attached to Krishna. So that process is to hear Krishna Katha. So that is the essence of the whole thing. Then Kapila Dev explained the fundamental principles of material existence, the creation of the different elements. But yet if one knows that and doesn't hear directly about Krishna, one will have missed the point. That jnana is incomplete unless it is brought to the platform of knowledge about Krishna. Directly about Krishna and his attractiveness. Because unless one becomes attracted to Krishna, one will not be able to give up the attraction to the material energy. So it is not optional that we should become attracted to Krishna. It is necessary. It is required. Therefore, Prabhupada explained in the last paragraph of what we read, the mind is always attracted by the asat, the temporary material existence. Because we have been associated with material nature since time immemorial, we've become accustomed to our attachment to this temporary material nature. The mind has to be fixed at the eternal lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one has to fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. So that means that one has to become attracted and attached to Krishna, that person, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-attractive one. So that's the essence of the process. By hearing Krishna Katha, and therefore text 6, Yama Divir Yoga Pataya Abhyasan Shradayan Vita Mayi Bhavena Satyena Mat Katha Shravanena Cha. So Kapila Muni says, one has to become faithful by practicing the controlling process of the yoga system and must elevate himself to the platform of unalloyed devotional service by chanting and hearing, Kapila Muni says, about me. So practice yoga. Okay, practice yoga. But the purpose of the practice of yoga is to detach ourselves. But the essence of the detachment, or the purpose of the detachment, is the attachment to Krishna. And that is accomplished by hearing and chanting about Krishna. This is Kapila Muni's teachings. Prabhupada explains, bhavena or bhava is a very important factor in the practice of yoga, or in any spiritual process. Bhava is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Buddha Bhava Samanvita. One should be absorbed in the thought of love of Krishna. When one knows that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, is the source of everything, and that everything emanates from Him, Aham Savasya Prabhavo, then one understands the Vedanta aphorism, Janmad Yasya Yataha, that Krishna is the original source of everything. And then he can become absorbed in bhava, or the preliminary stage of love of Godhead. Rupa Goswami explains very nicely in Bhakti Visamata Sindhu how this bhava, or preliminary stage of love of God, is achieved. He states that first of all one has to become faithful. Shradayan Vita. Faith is attained by controlling the senses, either by yoga practice, following the rules and regulations, and practicing the sitting postures, or by engaging directly in bhakti yoga as recommended in the previous verse. Of the 9 different items of bhakti yoga, the first and foremost is to chant and hear about the Lord. That is also mentioned here. Mat katha shravanena cha. One may come to the standard of faithfulness by following the rules and regulations of the yoga system, and the same goal can be achieved simply by chanting and hearing about the transcendental activities of the Lord. The word cha is very significant. Bhakti yoga is direct, and the other process is indirect. But even if the indirect process is taken, which is the indirect process that's being spoken of? Sankhya or... the yoga practices of the asanas, etc. It's indirect, because the purpose of that is to control the mind, and the purpose of controlling the mind is to focus it on Krishna. So the goal is to focus it on Krishna. So to learn to control the body is indirect. An indirect method of the ultimate of learning to control, of learning to focus the mind on Krishna. So bhakti yoga is direct and the other process is indirect. But even if the indirect process is taken, there is no success unless one comes fully to the direct process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. It's like if you have old furniture in your house and you want to get new furniture. So you throw out all the old furniture. So it's not complete until the new furniture is moved in. Otherwise you end up with nothing. So to just control the senses is not complete. The process isn't complete, or the practice isn't complete, until the senses are actually focused upon Krishna and the mind is dwelling in Krishna. That is transcendental consciousness. That is non-material spiritual consciousness. Therefore, the word in this verse, satyena, is used. In this connection, Srila Swami comments that satyena means nishkapatena, without duplicity. The impersonalists are full of duplicity. Sometimes they pretend to execute devotional service, but their ultimate idea is to become one with the Supreme. This is duplicity, kapata. The Bhagavatam does not allow this duplicity. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is clearly stated, Paramo Namatsaranam. This treatise, Srimad Bhagavatam, is meant for those who are completely free from envy. So how to become free from envy? Yeah, okay, but what is the thing that we were just talking about that would remove envy from it? And stop thinking that we own the material world and is meant for us, and is meant for our enjoyment. And that actually springs from envy of Krishna, that consciousness. So to perform devotional service without any feelings of proprietorship or ownership or envy or the enjoying spirit, selfishness, that is Krishna consciousness. So this treatise, Srimad Bhagavatam, is meant for those who are completely free from envy. The same point is again stressed here. Unless one is completely faithful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engages himself in the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, there is no possibility for liberation. So completely faithful. Meditate on what that means. That means completely, because to give up sense of proprietorship in this material world is very, very difficult. Why? Because if I don't have, because what one learns in the material world is if I don't take care of myself, no one's going to take care of me. And what one learns in Krishna consciousness is that Krishna, that I am in Krishna's hands and putting myself fully dependent upon him. But this requires, to do this fully, continuously, requires deep, deep, deep faith. And it will work out, but maybe not in the short term. Because we see in the Bhagavatam, there are examples like when we see with Chitraketu Maharaj, we'll hear about him in what canto? Sixth canto. He becomes a devotee, a great devotee, and he's cursed quickly after that to become a demon. And Prithik Maharaj, he's the king, he's a devotee, he's the king of the world, he becomes cursed to die within 7 days. But in each case, Krishna has a plan to bring the devotee closer to him quickly. But if one's faith isn't strong, then it becomes terrifying, practically speaking, because we've given up sense of proprietorship, you have no way to protect yourself. And unless you're able to hold on tightly, unflinchingly to Krishna, it's very, very difficult. So therefore the process is ultimately one of deep, deep, deep trust and faith and surrender and fully putting oneself, gotripte varanam datta, putting oneself fully under the protection and care of Krishna. Unless one is completely faithful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engages himself in the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, there is no possibility for liberation. So what is that process? So the essence of hearing and chanting has been given. And help secondary parts of the process that help. You know, they will be given from 7, 8, and 9. In executing devotional service, one has to see every living entity equally, without enmity towards anyone, yet without intimate connections with anyone. One has to observe celibacy, be grave, and execute his eternal activities, offering the results to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For his income, a devotee should be satisfied with whatever he earns without great difficulty. This is all practical advice. He should not eat more than what is necessary. He should live in a secluded place and always be thoughtful, peaceful, friendly, compassionate, and self-realized. So Prabhupada explains very practical elements of these explanations of these, how to practically apply these principles to our lives in his purport. But we won't read them right now because we're running out of time. Yeah, we'll just read. The next item is a devotee should live in a secluded place. Generally, a common man is interested in pounds, shilling, and pence, or materialistic advancement in life, which is unnecessary for a devotee. A devotee should select a place of residence where everyone is interested in devotional service. Generally, therefore, a devotee goes to a sacred place of pilgrimage where devotees live. It is recommended that he live in a place where there is no large number of ordinary men. It is very important to live in a secluded place. So that's the practical application of that. The devotee should not... The next item is shanta, peacefulness. The devotee should not be agitated. He should be satisfied with his natural income, eat only as much as he needs to keep his health, live in a secluded place, and always remain peaceful. Peace of mind is necessary for prosecuting Krishna consciousness. Text 9. One's seeing power should be increased through knowledge of spirit and matter, and one should not unnecessarily identify himself with the body and thus become attracted by bodily relationships. So this again is, this is the practices of Sankhya Pat, and Prabhupada explains in the purport the practical application of these things, how in Krishna consciousness these things are met, but somewhat in different ways sometimes than how they would be in Sankhya. Because in Sankhya Yoga, it is like the yoga, Astanga Yoga is practiced in this sixth chapter, explained in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. You have to go to a secluded place, fully celibate, stare at the tip of your nose, sit in an asana in one particular way, completely free from fear. Everything regulated very, very strictly. So all these are meant, these practices are meant to have a particular effect in the consciousness. So if the effect is gotten in a somewhat different way, but the effect is gotten in Krishna consciousness, then we take that from, like the example is live in a secluded place. So basically that means you live alone in the forest. But when one's practicing Sankhya Yoga, but in Krishna consciousness it means live in the association of devotees, or not when there's so many non-devotees around that always you're hearing non-devotional things and the consciousness is dragged down. Okay, thank you very much. So we'll continue, and hopefully if Krishna allows this week we'll finish this chapter. Any questions or comments? Well, devotees are naturally compassionate. But compassion the question could be phrased a little differently. Do the devotees in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, do they feel compassion? It's natural when you see someone in distress to want to help them. If you have any sobriety, it's just natural. But the point for devotees is that we shouldn't limit that compassion to the bodily necessities and the bodily problems of people, because that doesn't solve the problem. So if you see someone who's hungry and starving, if you have an ounce of goodness in you, how could it not wrench your heart when you hear about what's going on in the world? Are they shooting each other and killing each other and counter-killing and this and that and mass graves and this and that? How could you not feel horrible about that? But yet, when thinking about what the solution to the problem is and actually trying to do something, one shouldn't limit himself to the same material compassion that the materialist type of people think of. So, yeah, that's the basic principle. There's a question that Jiva Goswami raises. It's interesting. Is that if compassion means that you experience the pain of another as if it's your own, something like that. So therefore, can Krishna, who never experiences pain, can he experience compassion? Interesting question. You have the answer?
Why can't Krishna experience pain?
Because he's composed of bliss. Well, that's the question. Does he experience pain, or does he never experience pain? And if he doesn't experience, if he does experience pain, therefore, how is he composed of bliss? And bliss. And if he doesn't experience pain, how can he be compassionate? That's the question.
I guess he witnesses our pain.
But does that cause him pain? And if it does cause him pain, that means he experiences material pain. And therefore, how is he God? How is he the Supreme Lord above all, everything material? And the answer that Jiva Goswami gives is, yes, he can feel compassion, but yes, he doesn't experience any pain. This is some of the great qualities of Krishna. He can do the impossible quite easily. Because he's Sarvajna, he's all-knowing.
Yeah.
But that spiritual pain is something else. So should I bring Giriraj tomorrow?
Yes.
Will you bring a flower, Edward?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And you have to come, okay? Yeah. Everyone has to come to see Giriraj. Now these are the most amazing stones you've ever seen. At least 3 to 5, okay? Okay. This is perfect for all stone worshippers. This is something they'll be able to identify with. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kapila Muni ki jai.